This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is a Joy 94.9 podcast presented by Paul Anthony with the assistance of the Gay and Lesbian Liaison Officers, Victoria Police, Crime Stoppers, and Joy 94.9 working together to make our community safe. Due to copyright restrictions, the music has been edited to make this podcast possible.
Joy, everywhere in the world. Listen online at joy.org.au.
My next guest joined the police force at the tender age of 19, where she went on to become the first woman to head a police department in Australia, and also the first woman to become the Chief Commissioner of Victoria Police from April 2001 to 2009. She's a hero to many people from marginalised groups, including that of gay and lesbian community, when in 2002 she controversially allowed and participated with uniformed police in Pride March here in Victoria. Did I mention that she is a hero? Christine Nixon, welcome to Joy 94.9.
Thank you.
And also welcome Sergeant Scott Davis and Senior Constable Gabby Tyack.
Thank you, Paul. This is very formal to give them ranks and everything. Wow.
We're important people.
Obviously, yes. I'm just ordinary Christine Nixon these days.
Yes. I did think of that and I thought, no, she's getting Christine Nixon now.
So. He's never given a drum roll before.
No.
I think it's a little bit like being President of the United States, and I've said this to you before, that if you're an ex-President of the United States, you're still President. You're referred to as President. So I think it's only appropriate that we still refer to you as Chief Commissioner.
Oh, no, thanks. It's got too many responsibilities. I don't want to do that.
Today I have the privilege of helping our community understand who Christine Nixon is. I want to know what makes her tick, and I want to know if her life experience influenced her in becoming a leader in social issues and making decisions like allowing members of her then police force participate in Pride March. Firstly, Christine Nixon, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Apparently, I'm not allowed to say that you were born in 1953.
No, it's okay. Past that, because I had a birthday on Monday. So.
Oh, there you go. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
But what I do know is you grew up in the northern beaches of Sydney, and you were a keen surfer, and you loved basketball. Your dad was a policeman. But I want to start off with your mum. What did she do?
My mum worked pretty much from, I think, when I was about two, I went into childcare. And she worked in Coles and she was an usherette and did sort of whole ranges of things. I guess mum was someone who, you know, is just a great woman and is in her 80s now. But she was someone who just was very significant and still is in my life.
Your mum was determined that her children would grow up to be independent. Mm. How did she go about doing that?
Well, from a very young age, we had chores and I mean, you know, 5 and 6 year olds. And we would often do the shopping. We lived in a fairly sort of new community. That stage didn't have buses and things, so you had to walk about 2 kilometres up home from where the bus dropped you off. And this is in the suburban area of Manly at the time. But my mother used to make sure that we shopped. We were taught how to cook, you know, all the things that a good 9-year-old could do. And I used to be the one who, we went to town with my friends, that I would, you know, be the one to be in charge of getting us onto the ferry and into the movies in town and then home again. And I probably was about 10 or 11. So she did it by saying, I trust you and I know you can do it. And she gave us the confidence to be able to do it. And it just seemed to me that's what the world was like. And I couldn't quite figure out why other kids weren't the same as us.
Do you think this assisted you or prepared you in becoming a policewoman?
Well, look, it probably gave me a confidence about being able to do things. And I also talk about layers of experience. So, you know, when you're young and you're given challenges and you're given opportunities to do things, then they give you an experience that says, yeah, I can do this. And then through the church, I was my mother was an elder in the church and she got me to be the Sunday school superintendent when I was 15. There's about 120 kids went to Sunday school. And so I've learned how to take a leadership position. So I think what happens, what she was doing was really encouraging us to do things and to layer the experience so that you stuffed up, certainly stuffed up on occasions.
At least 100 times.
But you learn then you can actually pick yourself up afterwards. So I think that was important too.
Was superintendent of the church, was that your first job or did you have another job?
Well, it wasn't exactly a job, but no, I had a job. I went to work at Coles and in those days it was called Coles Variety Stores.
Oh, that's right.
I didn't think, Scott, you were that old.
Oh, no, I do remember Coles Variety Stores.
But they had counters where, you know, you'd sort of stand in the middle of the counter and people would kind of be around. It was obviously a bit different to the way shops are laid out these days. But at about 14, went to work Saturday mornings and then every holiday, whenever we had school holidays, I'd work in Coles. And so I worked in menswear and toys and then the lolly counter. But I didn't stay at the lolly counter much because I kind of sampled the produce.
Was this your choice, or did your mum want you to go out and get a job?
Oh, I think probably mum wanted me to get out and get a job, and she worked when she was 13, because that was sort of the World War II era as well, and she had to do that because of the family she had. So I think part of it was encouraging, but because I liked the money as well. I was a well-paid 14-year-old, you know. I mean, I think I must have got about $3 or $4 that I can think of. It wasn't a lot of money.
But it helps with the independence as well to get that sort of money.
Yeah, and I could buy things and I could pay for things. So I think that was part of it. And I worked at Coles till I was 18. You know, it was a great experience. And so
it helps you to learn how to deal with people by being in a situation like that.
Oh, it does. You know, especially the men's underwear, which was very, very interesting for me. But people used to come back, and because I'd treat them properly, I think, and I tried to get it right what I was doing. So it's a great experience. So Sunday school superintendent and the Coles checkout.
And I think there's a bit of a theme here with the Sunday school superintendent, because I think you were the first woman in that group to be the Sunday school superintendent. Is that right?
Yeah, I was. And I think the second one I did was, I got involved. We used to have a church camp with about 200 young people would go away sort of once a year for a church camp. And the blokes were always in charge. They called it the camp secretary. And I thought, I reckon I can be the camp secretary. So eventually there was a coup. And I became the camp secretary at all of the grand age of 19, I think, by that stage.
Oh, well done.
Yeah. I thought that would be my job to be the camp secretary. All right. Your dad was in the police force too, which he rose to the rank of assistant commissioner in New South Wales. How much of an influence do you think he was for your decision to join the force?
He was a bit of a reverse influence, I think. He didn't want me to join. So as a good 19-year-old, I thought there must be something in this, you know. And so I think Dad was just being protective of me more than anything else. And then he decided that my mother and I were clear that this is what we wanted to do and I wanted to do. And so he came on board and helped and has never really stopped giving me advice since, actually.
And the rest is history.
Yeah, it is.
Take me back. All right, it's 1972. You're 19. You've just joined the police force. Was it the same for police women in New South Wales as it was for them here in Victoria, where they were given a handbag to put handcuffs in, only allowed to work with children and women, and not allowed to work alongside male officers?
Yeah, that was pretty much it. I think that we finished class. It was only 6 weeks training. And then went out, and I went out to lecture school children. And there was kind of two groups. One worked with young girls who were runaways and women who'd been sexually assaulted. And the group I worked with were the people who lectured kids and did school crossings. And there were only a few of us. There was only 130 women when I started.
Wow.
So it was in very small numbers. So that sort of was, I had the handbag. It was a nice black handbag. And I had to say, if you hit anybody with it, they knew they were hit.
You were one of three police women chosen to trial the first experiment of having women on the front line of policing. I can't believe it was an experiment. Take me through your first night.
It's interesting. We arrived there, the three of us together, with one of the women inspectors, I think. And so we paraded down with our handbags to the front of the police station. It's just a classic. Anyway, I just wonder about it. Mind you, there's a picture of the newspapers that day, the Darlings of Darlow, you know, which is, anyway, Darlinghurst was a very different place in those days. So we went, turned up, and the sergeant, in a fairly unwelcoming manner, sort of said to my colleagues, you know, one of you can go home because you're on at 11 o'clock at night.
Welcome to work, yes.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. And then the other one, I think he said to her, you're on at 3 o'clock this afternoon, and the other one, you can, you know, go in and you're starting now. And that was our welcome to the station. Mm. I suppose the first night that I worked was, a real eye-opener. Darlinghurst Police Station was probably the biggest, busiest in the Southern Hemisphere at that stage. You could have up to 300, 400 people a night arrested there. And, of course, we also had 400 police officers work there, plus the vice squad, plus, you know, 21 Division, a lot of other teams of people charged people and brought them into Darlinghurst as well. So the first night for me was in the station. Of course, it took us quite a while to be able to escape out to work outside. The boys didn't trust us. But I learned a lot and I met a lot of people.
We're currently having a chat to Christine Nixon, and with me is Sergeant Scott Davis and Senior Constable Gabby Tyack, myself Paul Anthony.
We can drop the ranks. I'm pretty certain we can, yeah.
Oh, I like saying them.
We remember who we are.
I don't. I never say them at all. I normally say the good police.
That's right.
0427 Joy 949 or on air at joy.org.au if you'd like to say hello. Mark says, I think I can speak on behalf of the GLBTI police members in praising you for your courage in supporting workforce diversity. In a short space of time, you transformed Victoria police culture and made the organisation a much more welcoming and comfortable place to work. Not just for the members of GLPN, but for everyone. This has clearly improved our ability to provide a better service to our diverse community. Congratulations on a amazing legacy and best wishes in your new role.
Hear, hear.
Nice. Okay. Very kind of you.
Now we need to continue our line of questioning.
Our interrogation.
Right. Yes. Anything you do say will be used.
You know that too well, Paul.
In the court of Paul Anthony.
What's going on?
Oh, well, you know. Had you guys in every week. So.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Gabby, it's your turn to take over the lead.
Christine, there were 400 police at Darlinghurst when you arrived there. So that means that 397 of them were male.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine that it was a very macho blokey environment and rather intimidating.
Yeah, well, I don't know about intimidating. Certainly it was a macho blokey environment because also you were dealing with, you know, hundreds of male prisoners as well. So I think that was part of it. But I think what the three of us did, without really, you know, talking amongst ourselves over it, but we just were ourselves. I mean, I think it was important not to, you know, adopt or adapt or, you know. So when people swore and yelled, I used to say, look, I'm sorry, I'm not putting up with that, stop it. And they go, oh, my God, you know. And so it kind of changed the dynamics in the station. And even the old, you know, blokes who were drunks, et cetera, used to apologise when they swore. And I think it just actually lifted the station a bit from where it was. It was pretty average behaviour in some cases. And so I think they decided that they would change. But I wasn't really intimidated. I mean, I'd, you know, grown up, obviously, with lots of guys around me and I'd surfed and so I wasn't intimidated by them.
It was probably good to have a feminine influence in the police station.
Oh, I think it was. I don't think there's any doubts about it. I thought lots of people felt it was good and many of the police did. I think they felt like it was a bit more human and a bit more decent environment to work in, and it was a side effect I don't think anybody really would have thought about. I think it did raise it. The other two women were a bit older than I was, and were both married and a bit more settled, I suppose, than I was. But they also behaved exactly in the same way without us really recognising it. So we kept sort of standards and tried to do our best to make sure at least we had some sort of sense of decency in the station.
Last week, Paul spoke with Inspector Mark Keane, who told us how, as a gay man, he confronted police where he worked. He confronted them about their prejudices. I think you've spoken a bit about your strategies on dealing with a male environment, working at Darlinghurst as a female.
Mm.
Is it similar to being a gay man working in the police force, being a woman in the police force at that time?
Oh, look, I think it was really hard for people who were gay within the police force in those days, and perhaps even, you know, up until relatively recently in some cases, which I always talked about this idea of the other. And I think women and people who are gay, you know, people from different ethnic backgrounds, a whole range of us were just not the mainstream. And I think for, you know, we were sort of treated as the other. And so I think what's happened is the other is now become recognised as great contributors and, you know, just being accepted for what you are and who you are. And I think that's been the piece I've tried to have, certainly when I was in New South Wales and also obviously with Victoria Police as well, to have us all treated decently and respectfully. And that's an important part of it. So I suppose, you know, part for me early was recognising that the way we were treated was wrong, the way many other groups in our communities, probably even more broader, was wrong as well.
I think that moved over into other areas as well. You know, as a white heterosexual male in the police force, but who's not stereotypically that macho sort of male, certainly made it a nicer environment even for me to be able to operate within.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I watched that at Darlinghurst. So I'd sort of seen it in an environment where I watched the macho people, guys kind of gentle down a bit. And I watched the people who were feeling like, you know, they were excluded, kind of come up a bit. And it was so you had a much better, more equitable environment where people felt more comfortable. And I think that's the piece that I've watched. And certainly I think in Victoria Police, you know, that's what we've seen happen is people felt like they were more able to, you know, be themselves and be able to contribute and be valued for that contribution. So I hope, I mean, I'm sure that'll stay over time, and that's been a really important part of the work for me.
I think of Darlinghurst as the gay capital of Sydney. Mm-hmm. Do you have any early memories of working with the gay community?
Oh, look, there were lots of people in the early days that I suppose my first memories when people were arrested, you know, who were there, and people were arrested for offensive behaviour. You'd get a lot of different people would be coming for different sorts of offences. So I suppose early days, a lot of people who saw me there felt like, okay, you know, this woman will be reasonable and decent to deal with, and I was. I met a lot of the prostitutes. I met a lot of the transsexuals. I mean, there was just whole sets of people in early days who I think felt far more comfortable having us around there, and I think they were right because it would have been far more comfortable because I think, you know, those were the days. But it was, of course, there was a lot of conflict, which I guess you know about.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, early days, there was obviously a particular demonstration, which I suppose a turning point for lots of us and certainly for me, and, you know, the idea of trying to get into a police station when it was being sort of stoned, I have to say, by the gay and lesbian community was something that I just, this is not right. You know, this is not right that people are treated this way because of their sexuality. It was just not right.
Well, that's right. In 1978, police arrested members of the gay community who were participating in the protest march, which eventually became to be known as the Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras. Mm-hmm. Were you trying to get into the police station or were you in the police station at the time?
Well, it was kind of both, really. We're sort of in it and out of it, and we were trying to... I mean, I wasn't involved directly in the demonstration, but certainly it just seemed to me that it was a very sad thing to see, that people who just simply wanted to exercise their rights and had a right to do so were being limited. And it was really a turning point. I think in lots of ways it was a change that really started, you know, you started to see in the way people started to think about gay and lesbian people and their rights and their rights as citizens.
So was it the time that you realised that the focus for police should be about how you treat people, not just locking up crooks?
I learned a lot during that time, and I've talked about it a lot. I watched so many different people get arrested in Darlinghurst, and so many people that if you treated them decently and with respect, then you were fine. They treated you with respect, and I think that's a great lesson for all of us, that everybody deserves respect until they lose it, until they do something that, you know, that you would lose that respect for them.
Our next track, chosen by Christine Nixon, and I'm not sure whether Scotty's liking the track.
You know my views on the music.
Yeah. He's the one that doesn't like the good music. We know what's good.
Okay, Helen Reddy, I Am Woman. Why I Am Woman?
Oh, it's really in that era, it was the 70s, early 70s, and it was really the change for women and for a whole lot of people that finally people started to listen that the world needed to change.
Here we go. It's I Am Woman with Helen Reddy right here on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9. Tune in a couple of times and you'll be moving in.
Yes, you'll definitely be moving in. Someone I think who's already moved in is Christine Nixon, who's my special guest, along with Scotty and Gabby. Dawn says, top choice of tracks, Christine. Have you ever considered being a presenter on Joy?
And I think I'm a bit busy at this stage to do that, actually.
In the future, perhaps.
Perhaps.
I will reveal a little bit while that track was going. Christine was singing at the top of her voice yes. to that song and yes. revelling in it.
Yes, we were preparing for what we're going to be saying next, and Christine's just, la, 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 la.
I didn't want to interrupt.
Well, I nearly turned the microphone on so yes. everyone could hear. Have you done karaoke before?
I never do karaoke. I actually do sing, though, with Code One, the police band.
Oh.
I've been known to do that once or twice.
Okay. Scotty, we're putting the questioning over to you.
Thank you very much. Most of the interviews that I've heard you participate in jump from Darlinghurst to you being an assistant commissioner.
Yes.
And being in the middle ranks of Victoria Police, I'm a little bit interested in where you became a sergeant. And I ask this because I know one of your first shifts at Darlinghurst, the sergeant pretty much dragged you out and led you through every strip joint and bar within the town, which was almost a little bit of a setup to fail, I think.
Oh, it was no doubts about that.
Yeah.
He did. And just to add to it, there were about 7,000 American sailors in town at time as well. So
crikey.
It was just a really nice opportunity.
Welcome to policing.
That's it, you know. And watch out, kid, you're going to be in trouble.
And I imagine that the hope was that you might sort of crawl off into the corner and cry it. And go back where the women should be.
Yeah, that's it. That was exactly the case. But he found it was a bit opposite to that. And, in fact, we didn't get into any trouble at all. And
I always found that working with a policewoman that it's a calming influence to drunks and to other violent people. So
yeah, it was. And I think it was a bit of a shock to him. But at least he had the decency at the end of the night to say, well, you know, kid, you did okay.
Yeah.
And thereafter, we went from there. But look, it's interesting about, you know, people sort of jumping from one place to another. I became a sergeant after having been in the police for 16 years.
Yeah.
So it was about seniority in those days. And so that's what happened to me. But when I stayed at Darlinghurst for a while, then I went in actually to work in education because mm-hmm. I think they decided I was causing too much hassle. And so I went to work with a great man whose name is John Avery. And John, 6 years after that, became the police commissioner. Mm. So I worked with him in policy reform and education for about sort of 6 years. And then I went to America. I did other sorts yes. of things in there as well. And was still a senior constable and came back. At one stage, I was sort of, when I was at Darlinghurst, became the station sergeant because about 300 of the police got transferred overnight. It was one of those
yes.
Tactics that people use in policing to clean out a whole station. Everybody got transferred. And that left a few of us who'd been there for a while, and so I got to be the station sergeant, which was quite a significant job. I was only a constable first class, but yep. got to take that job on. So I did other things, obviously, you know, during the time between becoming an assistant commissioner in 1994,
yes.
I think.
A text message from Jill in Lara. Congratulations on doing many things for the first time that no other woman has done.
It's very nice, isn't it?
And she's asking, how did you find the courage?
Look, I think all of us have got the courage when you start to think about what it is you want to do. And first of all, you have to figure out why you can't do it. What would it be that stops you? And think about whether those limits are real or not. And I think, you know, people said to me, oh, you couldn't do general policing. And I went, well, the blokes can do it. I must be able to, you know, it's not that hard. And so that was my first bit. So you get a bit of courage to say, yeah, I can have a go at this. I think you have to just put a lot of that aside for people telling you you can't do something. And then, of course, they told me you couldn't become a sergeant and then couldn't study and get a degree and all of those things. And part of it is just deciding whether the people who are telling you this thing are telling you because they actually know or because it is they want you to be afraid and not challenge and not do things differently. You can imagine when I was very young, there weren't very few people who would have ever said to me, you can become the police commissioner. And even when I was in about my mid-30s and I was interviewed by a journalist and he said to me, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? I thought 30 was pretty grown up. But yes. Anyway, I said, I want to be the police commissioner. And he went, oh, don't be ridiculous. And I went, listen, you're a journalist. What do you know? You know? And I mean, so part of it is to think about why people are telling you you can't do something. So maybe that's why I've got the courage still is because I've seen so often and so many people who have pushed the boundaries about their own limit and achieve great things.
So, Christine, what do you want to do when you grow up?
Retire, actually. not quite. But, you know, I've got to sort of 56 and I'd like to do some other things after the bushfires and after we've done lots of good work with the community.
Yeah.
All right, I want to fast track a few things. You become Assistant Commissioner in New South Wales.
I do.
You applied for South Australia and New South Wales Commissioner roles and eventually got Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
Within months of arriving in Victoria, you were asked to go to Pride March.
Yeah.
Last week, Scott and I interviewed Inspector Mark Keane about asking you to participate in Pride March, and here's what he had to say.
We asked to march in Pride March a number of times in uniform, and we didn't get a very receptive response. We were allowed to participate in the Midsummer Carnival in uniform, but we weren't allowed to display our Galpen banner because it had the words gay and police.
In the same sentence.
Yeah, and I think people didn't want to see those two words together. We also weren't paid. We were allowed to be in uniform, but we were off duty. And that continued for many years. We actually policed the event, in effect free of charge. But at the time, we considered that to be a bit of a win.
And important.
I'm assuming, because we're talking about it, something's obviously changed. What changed and when?
There had been some incremental changes throughout the 90s. We'd had the establishment of an equity and diversity unit. We had a first pilot program involving a gay and lesbian liaison officer. A lot of people will remember Melinda Edwards, who did a magnificent job in that role, and she's now doing great work up in Darwin with the Northern Territory Police. So we'd had a few things that had happened, but the big watershed moment, the time when everything changed, was when Christine Nixon was appointed as Chief Commissioner. She commenced her tour of duty, I guess, doing a bit of a whirlwind tour of the state, asking police officers, how can we make things better? What would you like to improve? And we invited her to attend the Galpen Annual General Meeting, and she was the first commissioned officer to actually take up that invitation. And during that AGM, I asked her, would you let us march in Pride March in uniform? And she hesitated for about a nanosecond and said, I don't see why not. The follow-up question was, will you lead us in the march? And she said, oh, ask me. So I said, will you lead us in the Pride March? And she didn't miss a beat, not even a nanosecond. Her very words were, I'd be honoured. And that was really...
The rest is history.
Inspector Mark Keane telling us about how he got Christine Nixon to march.
He did, yeah.
Do you remember?
I certainly do. I remember it. And I have to say, I thought this was a good thing to do. And it wasn't about symbolism. It was the fact that I wanted to support members of Victoria Police. And what I'd said all along is if you do a decent job and you treat people properly, then I'm going to be there to support you no matter who you are within Victoria Police and more broadly in the community. But I had a bit of a history because New South Wales Police had marched in the Mardi Gras. And I'd been very encouraging and supportive of them doing that as well. So
I think in the year before you arrived here in Victoria, you took the salute at Mardi Gras.
Yeah, I did. And it was a great thing. So I remember when, you know, we agreed and I think it must have been then put on a website that this was going to happen. And seeing it was very interesting to watch the response because Neil Mitchell picked it up, actually. And he was obviously trawling websites, which I thought was interesting. And, you know, then came out that I had agreed to march. Well, you never saw anything like it. I was just staggered.
You didn't predict that at all?
No, I just think, what is this? And when the headline of one of the newspapers said, don't bring your Sydney ways to Melbourne.
I think evil Sydney ways was the word.
Evil Sydney ways to Melbourne. You've got to be kidding. I was in shock. I went, what kind of a narrow-minded community is this, that this would be seen as making the front page of a newspaper? And so, I remember my media director came and said to me, you didn't really agree, did you? I went, of course I agreed. I said, what are you going to tell me now, that I can support some people and not others? He went, no, of course not. And then I got all the inundated with the emails, and people said the same thing, like, you know, how could you possibly do this? And I went, because I said I'm going to support people who are doing a great job in our organisation, and I want to support them. Are you going to tell me I can support some or not the others? And so that was the kind of answer. So it was amazing.
That really leads us to this year, which was another amazing experience at Pride March. What are your memories of that day?
Oh, it was fantastic. Look, it was just the best day. And for me, you know, having made the decision to leave, and this was, you know, one of the final things, really, because I was finishing, well, as you know, I was finishing work and going to do other things in my life. Yes. But it was just, it was fantastic. And there was so much support and encouragement. And it was just a great day. And I think for so many people there, I think they could also see that policing had come an enormous distance. Mm. And people like you guys, you know, who do a fabulous job. And I think it was really, you know, important to kind of have it the other side. And I love some of the, there was a wonderful little Christine policing
shrine, shrine almost, wasn't it? There was a bit of an effigy in shrine.
It was so cute.
The Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence.
They did. And there was this lovely little Christine, you know, that they made. And one of their mums had done the medals and things. And it was just fantastic. So I just felt it was a great sort of, you know, for me, it was enormous satisfaction to say that so many people felt so much more comfortable. So many people had been encouraged to join Victoria Police as well. And that we had now much better liaison. And I thought all of that was just a great thing to be able to be part of and to see. And I just loved it. It was a great occasion.
I would assume that there would have been a breath of fresh air go through everybody who was gay and closeted in the Victorian Police Force. Do you think that would have been the case?
Well, certainly many of them said that was the case. And I think others have said more broadly that there was a breath of fresh air in Victoria Police. And I think coming from outside, that was very important. You know, I didn't come with any of that history or the background to it. And I think that meant that people could just, you know, be themselves. And there's this great song I should have actually asked, you know, the line that says, be yourself because everybody else is taken. You know, and I think that's an important part for us all. You should be able to be yourself. It's so hard trying to pretend to be something that you're not. And I think people in the gay and lesbian community, transsexual community, have very often had to pretend they're something that they're not.
Do you remember the Jewish lady?
I do.
That came up and had a chat to you at Pride March? Can you tell us about that?
She came up to me and with this look, and I went, oh dear, you know, I'm in serious trouble now. And it was really, you know, I thought, no, she's going to tell me off for doing this. And, you know, but anyway, she came up to me and said, Christine, I was in the Holocaust and now I've seen you do this. And she said, no, I feel really confident that something like that will never happen to us again, that you'll be here to support us. And that was, you know, I was just blown away.
Where to from now for Ms. Christine Nixon?
Well, as I imagine many of your listeners know, about the 9th of February, 2 days after the Black Saturday fires, the Premier and Prime Minister asked me what I manage the response to the terrible tragedy that we've all seen and many, many, many people have been involved in. So I have a 2-year contract to stay as the chair of the Victorian Bushfire Recovery and Reconstruction Authority. So that's taking an enormous amount of time at the moment. And again, you know, a great opportunity for me to, I think, be well used. I did a leadership study course once that said, if at the end of your time you feel like you've been well used and your skills have been well used, then that's an important thing. So I feel.
So you feel used?
I just feel well used. Now, it's not in the used way.
Oh, okay,
you
know, the well used.
The well used. So it's a challenge, I have to say. And it's been an amazing. So I'm going to do that for a while and then somewhere along the way write a book. Which will be, I hope, an encouraging book for many people to read and to understand some of what the experiences I've had and perhaps the lessons I've learned. And then I'll go teach for a while and just kind of, you know, have a bit of a quieter life perhaps.
Is this going to be a book full of goss?
No.
Come on.
It's a book full of lessons.
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 Lessons are good.
Ooh,
lessons are good, and they encourage people.
All right. So, Gabby and Scott, do you have any final words?
Oh, I was just going to say that last week was International Day Against Homophobia, and our new Chief Commissioner, Simon Overland, was one of three prominent Victorians who signed up to head StopHomophobiaToday.com website with a fantastic message from him and the Governor of Victoria and the Lord Mayor, Robert Doyle. So the tradition continues, and right. It's a wonderful thing that we've got another Chief Commissioner who serves this community well.
And I knew he would.
Yes.
I think Simon is a great choice, and I think he will continue to support all of the people within our community who deserve that support.
A couple of things before we let you go. You were saying the media went crazy, particularly your media person, said you didn't say yes to that. Did they say the same thing when they heard that I asked you to come on here?
Good one, Paul.
Just thought I'd ask. Graham from Brunswick says, thanks for all your good work, both past and to come. What a breath of fresh air you've brought to Victoria and its police force.
Now, Gabby's going to be on leave next week, so you've got me.
Scotty, you get to pick all the music you want.
I don't think you'll let me.
People will have to listen
a couple of Sundays in time on local and vocal when I'll be on with Jenny and play some of my music.
Yes.
Oh, dear. It doesn't like my music either.
No, that'll go down in history. You've just lost your rank.
Yes.
She's still got power, you know.
No.
Hand over the next.
Ex-Chief Commissioner. I'm sure we said that at the start.
Oh, nice. But she does know people.
Christine Nixon, thank you so much for joining us here at Joy 94.9.
It's been great.
And also thanks to Sergeant Scott Davis and Senior Constable Gubby Tyack.
If you have any knowledge concerning any crime, call Crime Stoppers on 1800 333 000 or visit crimestoppers.com.au. If it's an emergency, always call 000.
The Victoria Police Glows, Crime Stoppers and Joy 94.9, working together to help make our community safe.
The most livable city. The most lovable radio. Joy 94.9.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.